everyone. Welcome to episode 10 of 4J's and a Comic. 10.
Yeah, 10. It's a landmark.
Yeah.
Woot. It's pretty cool.
Double digits.
Tonight, we will be continuing on our discussion of Kurt Busiek stuff. Last week, we talked about Marvels, and we were going to talk about the first volume of Astro City, but our discussion of Marvels ran a little long. And
it's a rich book, lots to talk about. Yeah.
So we extended Astro City over to tonight's podcast, where we'll be reviewing the first Astro City volume and the third Astro City volume, Confessions. The first one, Life in the Big City, it's called.
Yes, yeah. That's correct.
Sorry, brain. Little brain hiccup there. Life in the Big City consists of the first six issues of Astro City, and at this time it was published from their first publisher, Image Comics. The first of many.
Oh, no. How many has it bounced around to? I'm sure it went to Wildstorm.
Well, it went from Image and then to Homage Comics, which later became Wildstorm. Uh-huh. And then when Wildstorm was sold to DC, it was published through DC Wildstorm. Hmm. And now that DC discontinued the Wildstorm imprint, it is now published by Vertigo. So, four, I guess.
Why? It's a good book. Why did it bounce around? Is this the nature of the industry?
It wasn't in the main story arc, so they couldn't transfer it over to DC Comics.
Yeah, it was. It just happened to. I mean, basically, it's only been really published Image, which was kind of a self-publishing thing, and then when it went to Wildstorm, basically Jim Lee fronted the money up front.
So how much of Astro City is there?
A good amount. Think about 8 trades.
Okay.
And a brand new series.
Yeah. Unfortunately, Kurt, when he writes it, he got sick halfway along the line. And writing stuff like Astro City, which is a little bit more personal, he found harder to write being sick than Avengers or Justice League.
Sure, sure.
That he could just knock out. So it kind of slowed down to a crawl for a while, but now it's back monthly. So
awesome.
So for that aside, let's get started on first volume, Astro City. It consisted of six issues, and what was nice and refreshing was each one was their own story. So basically a series of short stories, and it's very rare now to see a done-in-one comic.
Yeah.
It wasn't quite as where in 97, but it was still, you know, they were going more towards story arcs and stuff like that. And so it was six done-in-ones. And like Marvel's, Astro City isn't necessarily told from the superhero's perspective. Although the first issue was told from this perspective of their version of Superman called the Samaritan.
Right, but even then it was not so much about the superheroing and really more about the life that he leads and around his superheroing.
Yeah, the story is basically him, when he goes to sleep at night, he dreams of flying, which many of us do who can't fly, but he can fly. But the twist is, whenever he flies, he just can't fly to enjoy it. It's, I got to zoom to this emergency and now zoom to that.
And every single place that he went in that entire one, he was always counting how many seconds it took him to get there.
I actually thought that was really cool.
Yeah, it was very interesting.
4 hours of work, 32 seconds of flight. Right. Or not even that. 4 hours of work, 6 seconds of flight.
Yeah, so all day he didn't even get really a whole minute of just flying, which is what he wants. It's all he wants.
I thought it was such a beautiful intro to a story to have the very first sort of few pages be this guy sort of flying around and just in just total ecstasy about it, and then you kind of wake up and you're like, oh,
all right, you know, time to fly to work.
Right, exactly. You're thinking, oh, this guy's dreaming of flying, and you're assuming that he's, you know, based on the intro that you get from Busiek and also from the perspective of the previous Marvels, you're kind of expecting it to be of the perspective of a normal person, but then sure enough it's a superhero, Superman type character. It was an interesting spin on it for him to be longing for being able to just enjoy flying around, which, of course, we all wish we could do. But even though he can, it's like his responsibilities are just crushing.
Mm-hmm.
That's really interesting.
Which pops back up in the sixth issue when he's out on a date, you know, first time ever.
That's one of the things I love that they did with these individual books is that they would refer back to each other occasionally. For example, like Joe just mentioned, you know, he tries to go on a date and the whole time he's kind of, you know, I could just go get that done. They can never just be there. Yeah. And it's
there's
him and
typhoon
him and,
going on somewhere else.
Yeah. He has to zip off and then come back. Like as he goes to the bathroom, then pew, goes and saves a bunch of people.
And I liked how it was basically every person in the superhero community had to pull together to say, we have everything covered. So you get, you two can go on a date.
Right.
Just take a night off.
And then the date doesn't even go that well. You can tell they're kind of at each other a little bit, you know, they have different sort of, I don't know, their moral compasses are pointed in different directions, you know, like, so, but even in the first book, he alludes to it sort of, you know, he's got this, he's got the most boring job in the world. As a matter of fact,
he's
his
like
job
editor,
is
right?
His
proofreader.
Job
researcher.
Yeah. His job is so boring. He has this device like the Zinextron or something like that, that he just clicks on and it goes and it does it for him. And then he rushes out to go save stuff. But he's got this like dossier of like the 25 most lovely women in, you know, in Astro City, like the cream of the crop, and he can have any one of them. But he's sort of like
the most famous superhero there is.
Yeah. Why, you know, when am I going to have time? Right. It's always going to, it just, I think he sort of foresees that it'll just end up badly. So you kind of feel sorry for the guy. He loves to fly, but even though he can fly, he can never, like, he doesn't really ever get to enjoy it.
Well, it just humanizes him a lot because you're thinking, when you watch all these superheroes or read books without them, you're thinking, oh, they have all these powers, and yeah, they're going saving the day, and it just seems all bright and sparkly and fun. And then on the other side of things, it's a crushing amount of, you know, responsibility.
Dude, try having a full-time job and two teenagers and a dog and a wife and a business and a podcast. I mean, I was like, wow, man, I've been there. Wow. So, yeah.
I also like, besides the story of Samaritan, we also got a good overview of the world to see that there's all these different
super groups. Yeah, you got a super group going on.
Mm-hmm. They were incredibly, that's one of the things I really liked about this was the panels don't have like a wall of text, but you learn so much from the small amount that's there, but also the art that's you know, sort of that fills the panels. And then one scene, there's when you first meet the Samaritan very, very early on, he sort of reaches down next to his desk and he kind of clicks this little button, and this device that I was mentioning earlier has this very organic kind of, you know, it looks like it's got wires coming out of it, but the wires are actually, they almost look like blood vessels. It's sort of like this interesting, organic, veiny looking
crystal thing.
Yeah. And right there, I thought, wow, that's really interesting. Like, what is that going to be, you know, in the future? What am I going to find out about that?
It seemed like they skimmed over really any explanation for who he was or what his powers were or anything, because that wasn't the point.
Yeah. Right.
You know, it's just like, okay, insert random superhero with, you know, obvious allusions to him being similar to Superman, and let's talk about his humanity. Let's talk about his day-to-day struggle.
Yeah.
How he got his
powers wasn't
not
the
important
story at all.
In the story. Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so, although I think that maybe that was one of the things that you have to willingly just get over.
Suspension
is that they don't.
Right?
Yeah, exactly. Because so much of the superhero thing is about where they came from and their backstory and what kind of powers they have and all that sort of geeky details. And with this, it's just like they just skip right over it. They mention a couple things and it leaves you going like, well, what is that crystal thing and where did it come from? And how does like that, you know, my sort of like nerd voice was like, but I want to know. Mm-hmm. And I had to keep calming myself down, be like, okay, John, you're here for the story, not the details. Put your sword away.
Now, this was definitely very much the secret lives of superheroes sort of thing.
I liked how it paralleled that in the Marvels. That was one of the things that, you know, I really thought that was a great combination for us to read sort of back to back was this and that.
Well, it's cool because in the Marvels, you don't really get any of the perspective of the super folk of the Marvels themselves. It's almost all Phil, right? Phil was his name?
Yeah.
It's almost all the main character who is Phil, the photojournalist.
Right.
You don't really get to get behind the scenes with the superheroes, and that's what this satisfies, that, you know, but it's still looking at the world through that lens of the kind of candid, everyday, honest, sort of just grind of life.
Right, right.
And not getting lost in all of the grandeur and excitement of the superhero stuff. But like what's like what Busiek was saying, like I'm interested in what's happening in that same world, but just over here on the sidelines. Like that's interesting to him.
Yeah.
And this is the same kind of thing, except it's like in at least in this first one. Then in one a little later where you're where you meet was it Jack in the Box or Jack?
Mm-hmm. Jack in the Box.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think I even asked you this at one point. I asked John at one point. I was like, are they just messing with me? Like, is this a parody? Like some of the characters, some of the superheroes are really they're very obvious. Inventive, right? Yeah, it's super obvious. And for a minute I was like, he shoots like streamers out of his wrist.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have to like, say that in Astro City, some of the guys, like probably the only supernatural type character that I came across that I thought was rad was the Hanging Man.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Like, that's so far, cool. Everybody else was just kind of silly looking. It was just like, man, you guys deserve to be in a circus. This is goofy.
Right. But down the line, when we get to some other trades later, there's some interesting stories. Like when you see Jack in the Box here in issue three, I believe.
Yeah.
And then later on in I think it's in Astro City Volume 2, which we skipped over, which you get his whole backstory.
Okay.
And it's like, for someone so silly, and then it's like, wow, what a great story.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Cool. They do that a couple of times where you're like, you got me. Okay. Like initially, you're sort of like, well, I don't know if it's a comic book character that I think is that cool. Because he's, you know, he's... but.
He's a clown who fights with streamers and has like giant springy legs,
which is kind of hilarious.
Just goofy.
But you know, the funny thing is, if you read the, I guess the back matter stuff, which in this case I've started reading, they really took him seriously. Like they worked on him for months. You know, his hair changed, and you know, and I was like, wow, they really okay. This isn't just goofing off. Like,
yeah, this isn't just insert random character to fulfill this piece. It was on purpose.
And that was, you know, speaking of sort of origins, when you do get to the Samaritan's origins, which I think is a really, really, really critical point of reading that I don't want to spoil. Mm-hmm. I actually had a holy crap moment. I was like, wow, that's really cool. Because it wasn't sort of like Superman comes from another planet, blah, 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 blah. It's like the Samaritan has a very specific, you know, purpose of, and his story of how he gets there and why, but also the sacrifices that he makes just doing what his was essentially, his job, I suppose, is pretty his impactful. Mission. It makes you kind of go, wow, man. It makes you like him a lot more. Not that he's not likable, but I was sort of like, wow.
So moving on to the second story in there, it's basically a reporter who's now the editor of the Astro City paper explaining to a new reporter that he just got hired, you know, about a story, because he has all these, you know, famous newspapers framed on his wall that stories he's written, and on there's one very small, about 2 inches, a paper type, and the guy's like, what can you tell me about this story? Why do you have this one framed up? So he goes into this giant tale of, you know, like this most intense
witnessing
this most intense superhero battle and
return of like a World War II superhero and
everybody thought he was dead, shark right?
men.
That's like one of the most awesome things you could possibly experience, let alone for someone whose entire job is to share stories about this cool stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But then it doesn't work out for him very well in the end.
Yeah, at the end, he can't prove anything except there was a shark on the subway.
Yeah, so it was, you know, he takes the story that he's... You know, he's a cub reporter, been on the job for like a week, and writes this fantastic story of what he witnessed, and nobody's believing him. You know, so he takes it to the editor, and the editor's like, well, we can't prove this. Give me back what you can prove. So whittled down, still can't prove this. Whittled down, till at the end, it comes in to be about a 2-inch page that says...
Yeah, it's like 50 words.
Trolley delayed by shark. An ATCA trolley was delayed this afternoon when it was struck a 6-foot frozen shark that had apparently fallen into the track in the vicinity of Iger Square, according to the ATCA and police officials. The shark had been hung by a rope above the piping of the trolley tracks. The rope broke and the shark fell below, ATCA theorized. You know, it's like...
In other words, like literally what you could have seen if you just happened to walk over there and watch what was going on.
Only what he could prove.
None of the fantastic badass battle and, you know, all of these superheroes saved the world from a sharky apocalypse.
Yeah.
Which the shark guy was hilarious. Yeah. The big bad shark god. Yes. It was pretty great.
The Cthulhu shark.
Right, exactly. I loved how he turned all of his followers to little shark people.
Yeah. Now, this reminds me, there was a shark found on the subway in San Francisco like last year.
It was just a couple months ago.
Was it only a couple?
In fact, that got me thinking about this because somebody posted on my Facebook feed, and then they sent a copy of the article to Kurt Busiek. You know, going, did you see this? You know,
it's happening. It's happening.
Holy crap.
Reminds me of a funny story that I told, which I won't go into now, but it is funny.
Okay.
Moving on.
That didn't delay the podcast as much as last week.
It'll delay us getting out of here when he tells it to us after we finish recording it.
Oh, we'll still hear the story.
You'll hear the story. Maybe I'll just tell it now. So I was at a party, and I was just being my normal self, telling jokes, whatever. And this was probably 10 years ago. And I was at a friend of mine's house and was with, like, you know, we were there with her parents having 4th of July or something like that in Mountain View. And the subject of the war came up because we were still dealing with, you know, the sort of the whole Iraqi war and stuff like that. And I'm like, you know what they need to do? Oh, it was right after they had brought out the term shock and awe, right? And I was like, you know what? Sending over our military over to the Middle East is not going to shock or awe anybody. I go, what you need is something they've never seen before. And they go, what you need to do is you need to invent a dry suit for sharks, not a wetsuit. I go, a wetsuit is something that we put on to go in the water. You invent a dry suit and you have our soldiers carry around these sharks in the desert because there's no military guy
that they're going to know what to do with this shark.
That's an immediate, they would surrender immediately because the first thing on my mind, if I saw somebody running through the desert with sharks that were alive in these weird mechanical suits and they could bite you, would be like, that's it. We've lost. There's no possible way that our civilization can fight against that.
Nothing scarier than a shark that could run on land.
That's because if you're going to have, there's only one place in the world that you can have a bowel emptying glimpse of whitey, and that's in the ocean. But if you're in the Sudan desert or whatever, and I just thought that's shock and awe. Bring them something they never ever would possibly fathom seeing in their entire lives, and they would just surrender. And when I saw this, I was like, oh my God, he did it.
Land shark.
So anyway.
That's awesome. Shark.
That's my story.
Shark. The Sharknado. That's why that shark is. That's why the shark was in San Francisco.
Sharknado.
It was the Sharknado, man. Has anybody here actually seen that?
No. I refuse to watch that kind of tribe because I still think the movies are art. And so you lose me when
that's
you.
That's adorable.
Right? Well, some movies. Primarily the ones I download.
You just rent them from Redbox and then rip them on.
That's exactly what I do. Thank God for Redbox. Since where we live, by the way, there is no video rental store. You can't go and rent a video. If you want to see it, you either have to buy it or you have to hope that Redbox has it or you have to, Amazon Video, whatever.
Welcome to the future.
Actually, you know, somebody posted an indie comic on Reddit in the comic books subreddit. And it was like the first 7 or 8 pages, and it's really good. Like, it's really amazing art, very painterly, like sort of like marbles. And I was like, dude, send this over to you. Send it over to John. Have him take a look at it and see what he thinks. And then I was blah, 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 blah. And I was like, I do two podcasts with these guys. And then somebody else replied, and he's like, oh, I love that store. So somebody that is a Redditor knows your store.
Yay.
Yeah.
That's it. That's all
awesome.
I got.
That's awesome.
I hope I wasn't a dick to him.
No, I love that store. And I'm like, I know, right?
So, John is universally well loved. It's the famous comic book shop in
Napa. I feel it, baby.
Or not Napa. I think it's everybody's like favorite Northern California comic book shop, period.
Or it should be.
It definitely should be.
So moving on to issue 3, we get introduced to said Jack in the Box that we were talking about earlier.
Yep.
Yep.
And the story has really not much to do with Jack in the Box.
Man, it's a henchman who accidentally discovers his secret identity.
Yeah, watch. It's just a henchman that's escaping from a botched job.
He was supposed to be the lookout for.
Yeah. He's the lookout on a couple of these, and they all get botched. He's not a very good lookout, but he keeps getting hired.
Yeah.
What was his name? I'm trying to find it.
Eyes.
Yeah, that...
appropriate. Because he keeps his eyes open.
Apparently, for Jack in the Box, and just watches him waltz right in.
Jack in the Box, by the way, is not in a giant aluminum box. And you have to, you don't have to turn the, you don't have to turn the handle before he comes out.
Though I thought like the nightmare that Eyes was having about being caught by Jack in the Box and he's strapped to the top of the box while he's cranking the handle. It's like, no, you don't have to do it. Yeah, I won't tell anybody.
Yeah, essentially, Eyes sees Jack in the Box changing into his, you know, regular civilian form.
And figures out who he is.
And is thinking, okay, I can sell this information and become rich and everyone will take me seriously. But then he thinks more and more, it's like, wait, they could just have me killed.
Yeah, they'll just kill me.
Or Jack in the Box, if he finds out, you know, he can make my life hell.
Yeah, so it was, this one was probably my favorite one out of this first group.
Yeah.
I thought it was really, really cool to get a window into essentially a thug's internal process of thinking, oh, I've got, you know, oh, I have this gray moral compass or no moral compass at all. And I have this information, I can make money off of it, and just all the chess moves that he sort of plans out and imagines. I could profit from this, but oh, wait, maybe this will be a problem. I could profit from this, but oh, wait, maybe these guys will kill me. And it's great because he goes through this whole night and then ends up trying to go to a bar. And then the Jack in the Box jumps into the bar and he's thinking, oh, he's coming after me.
Right. It's just total coincidence.
Yeah, exactly. And he runs into Jack in the Box like two more times over the next couple days. And eventually he's like, no, I'm out, man. I'm leaving. And he just leaves the city.
Right.
Doesn't reveal Jack in the Box.
But I like, even at the last page, when he's getting on the bus, he's like, well, I can still. He's like, no, on the bus, headed to Anchorage.
Fold. He folded, right? The thing is, this guy is a horrible lookout. He's a horrible criminal, really. But he's incredibly introspective, you know?
Yes.
He's got a great sense of, like, the perfect explanation. He's like, he's got three or four moves ahead in the chess game of his internal monologue. I will say that Jack in the Box cracked me up because, again, he can throw, what are the, like, party, he, like, streamers, he can, he's, like, got party streamers that can, like, incapacitate you, but also he's got an electrified rubber nose.
He puts on your nose and it zaps you.
Knocks the guy out. And that's what I was reading this, and I was, literally, the whole time I was like, is this serious? What the hell is this? Like, what has John got me reading? And then, you know, again, you get later into it, and you're like, oh.
Yeah, definitely some off-the-wall characters, but there's some really great narrative that comes in through them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Kind of surprisingly, almost out of left field.
And then the other thing is so interesting is he keeps continuing to build the world of the superheroes that inhabit it, but you'll only see one superhero for one frame. You know, somebody will pop in.
And half the time, they're just zipping through.
Yep, they're just solving some crime or whatever, and then boom, they're on to the next one. And you're sort of like, wow, you know, it's huge. There's so many of them.
Hmm. You get a great everyman perspective of this. You know, from the police cordoning off one side of town, you have to take a detour because they're fighting some giant rock monster here, and like, oh, yeah, that's normal. Damn it, gonna be late. Stupid rock monster.
Or, you know, one of the later issues where there's a character who's an old man, or is supposedly an old man, and he's up close watching this superhero and supervillain battle, and some policeman just kind of meanders up to him and goes, hey, what are you doing? This is a battle zone. How'd you get past the barrier? Come on, old man. Get back out here. And just very nonchalant and cavalier about it. He's like, oh, you got supers fighting over here. You better get out of the way. It's you know, another day in Astro City.
Yeah. Yeah, I really thought by, like, issue 4 that we're talking about now that it really hit its stride. And issue 4 was basically about...
This one's my favorite.
Yeah, it was my favorite, too.
The girl from the magic quarter.
Yeah, Shadow Hill is basically their magic quarter. And to live there, I guess vampires had once inhabited it as we kind of get... So she has to, you know, and she goes to work down in the regular city and taking the bus and...
Mm-hmm. But every morning she checks her crucifix, waters the garlic and wolf's bane. And
yeah, she's got this whole routine that she goes through in the morning that they never really explain why she does it. It roots you in the environment really quickly, that there's something there that, you know, you want to know more about and maybe perhaps that you're a little bit frightened of.
Yeah, you see when she's walking to get her, you know, her usual breakfast, that there's a tentacle monster in the shadows that can't be in the sunlight and it's creeping away. And she just looks at, oh, yeah, there's that thing.
But even then, you're still sort of, you know, you aren't, I don't think that I was even still at that point sort of like, okay, is she just nuts? Is she hallucinating? Is this, like I wasn't sure. Like, it's, you know.
Yeah, it took some time for it to settle in until she started talking about how the people that she works with sort of in Astro City proper.
Yeah, it's like, how can they react, live like, in shadow still?
So weird. Goodness. Monsters and vampires up there.
Yeah, and the hero of Shadow Hill is called the Hangman, and he's literally a guy that floats around with a noose around his neck and his neck has
kind
broken.
Of a scarecrow mask
yeah.
on.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Just floating around.
It's just really cool looking.
Which is interesting.
Morbid. Yeah.
And then at one point she's like, wait, did he look at me? He never
yeah, because
looks at
he
you.
Never looks yeah. at her. And yeah. it's this part of her normal routine. He just floats right by. She nods at him. He never even pays her any kind of mind. And then on the day that things change for her, he looks at her. And then keeps going. And she's right. kind of like, oh, shit. What does that mean? Is that a warning? What's happening?
And this is another one of those characters where you sort of nonchalantly get introduced to him. And you realize that there is some impact that he has because of that very thing. You know, like, well, he never looks at anybody. But did he just look at me? Later on down the road in the second trade that we'll talk about, you know, you get this much better, deeper, in-depth sort of look at him. And you know, it's another, for me again, it was one of those, another one of those whoa moments, right? So
yeah, I really like the story about the, you know, the whole thing of, do I want to stay at the place I know? You know, it seemed like it was very ethnic, very
yes
yeah,
you know,
very old world.
Yeah, very old world. Yeah, why don't you go work for the butcher down the street? He's single and not bad looking.
Yeah, his parents yeah. her parents are trying to egg her on to live and work and, you know, closer.
Yeah, be, you know, basically partake in their culture. Yeah.
It's,
you
almost know,
get involved in, you know, the local businesses there, and don't go out of town for work, and date inside Shadow Hill, and just be part of that community and not be always, you know, chasing her crazy fever dreams of being down with the normal people in Astro City.
Right. And when she works with, you're introduced to the first family, which is a family of superheroes, but only the very surface introduced to them. And she sort of works in that environment. And I kept on reading it as sort of like, it's almost like the little girl who lives on a farm that, and her, you know, her family wants her to stay because they need her to, kind of, but they don't want to, you know, step on her dreams. And so they let her go, but they, you know, again, you know, why don't you go work down at the butcher shop? You know, it'd be so good for you.
Yeah.
It was interesting to see where she went with things at the end,
mm-hmm.
you know, where you're thinking like, all right, man, she's gearing up, you know, sort of maybe 3/4 of the way through. To actually just say, forget it. I'm done with Shadow Hill. I want to go live out in the city with a friend and get away from all this crazy. Right, exactly. And then she goes through this crazy experience where,
you know, demolition.
Kind of, right, this sort of like awful version of the Fantastic Four kind of, or at least just like the Thing type looking creature.
Right.
Comes smashing around and destroys the building she's in and gets her in all kinds of danger. And then the first family comes along and saves her. And from that, she has sort of a powerful, you know, moment, introspective thoughts, and is just like, oh, you know, I think I'm just going to stay up there in Shadow yeah. Hill. Like, not that this is worse, but I just, yeah.
I know how to protect myself right. from the evil in Shadow Hill.
Right, exactly. It's familiar.
I have no idea how to keep myself right. safe here.
Yeah, I mean, she was at the mercy of these villains in a moment. Yeah. No clue what to do. Whereas in Shadow Hill, she's walking by tentacled monsters just being like, what's up?
Yeah, she knows how to handle the environment that she was mm-hmm. born and raised in.
Even if it's dangerous.
And the other interesting thing is that she's really, you know, you really could see a life for her in the city if she just gave it a chance. She's got friends. They, you know, one of the girls, I think at one point even asked her, hey, you should come
move. Yeah,
we got an extra room.
Even the pseudo celebrity that she works under ended up mm-hmm. by the end of things being really buddy-buddy with her and like, hey, if you need a place to stay, you know.
Yeah.
And so she had good connections down there. And it was really of her own volition that she's like, no, I'm gonna go back and be with my family and yep. be back mm-hmm. where I'm comfortable.
I did want to say, it's funny that you mentioned sort of Demolition, the big bad guy, because when I was reading it the whole time, I kept on thinking, somebody is an Aqua Teen Hunger Force fan and just made a giant, mean, evil meatwad.
Right? He does look like that. Yeah.
This was before
meatwad. Yeah, this preceded that.
Oh,
yeah.
Did it? Okay, well, then you know where they got their idea. Why don't we make him nice and stupid?
Meatwad's great. Isn't his name like Burger or something?
Something,
I don't know.
Glass Burger? I think it's on the next page.
Is it? Looks like a giant grill that they're fighting on. Look, that's a giant grill almost. Everybody's got such great Slamburger.
Slamburger.
His name is Slamburger. 12 beef patties. Take that.
There's just continually some just really wacky and colorful characters in this. And it's just another point where the strong narrative lets you get past all of the, well, who are these guys and what's going on here? And because I keep desiring to know more about these people, but it's just not what it's about.
Yeah, but none of them Jar Jar Binks the story, though.
True.
I mean, They are kind of silly and goofy a little bit, but none of them totally derail the story. You kind of look at it and go, okay, well, if you can, you know, if you can have a character, if you can have a superhero that's a giant, you know, Jack in the Box, then you can have a Slamburger as a character.
Order a Slamburger from Jack.
That's right.
And the fifth story deals with, John was alluding to it earlier, about this little old man who we're introduced to who likes to observe things. And he says, I like to be outside because I was stuck in the factory for all my life working. Mm-hmm. But it turns out that's just a cover story. And that he's actually a shape-shifting
bug alien.
An alien reconnaissance spy.
That's been sent to tell the people if Earth should be invaded or not.
Right.
And so he's watching, you know, the different superheroes and interacting with the world. And he's finally down to the point where, okay, depending on how these people act is, you know, basically the judgment of the world or not. Mm-hmm. So he happens to live in the same apartment complex as
Cracker Jack,
who's the biggest, you know, jerk superhero that's out there.
Basically the Booster Gold.
Yeah.
Booster Gold?
Is a DC guy who basically came from the future and he's like a jackass. And
yeah, he basically brought back a bunch of special tech from the future to make him be able to be a superhero.
Way he could become famous.
Yeah, with all the plan. Like newspaper headlines, so he knew when to show up.
Oh, what a... Okay. Yeah, this guy should be called Cracker Jackass because he is. He's just such a douche.
He is an asshole.
He's such a jerk. He takes credit for stuff and he gets a lot. And that's what this little dude's like... He's on the verge of being like, maybe I'll tell the leaders that there's just no point in coming to Earth. It's already wasted. There's no point in coming here and taking over the planet.
Well, even after following Cracker Jack around, basically, for one night, he still feels that way. He still feels like, even though this guy's a punk, you know, his tenacity is a representation of how much of a hassle it would be for us to try and take over this world.
Well, because
he even gets a little nostalgic with it. It's like, you know, it reminds me of when our race was young. We were, you know, headstrong and stupid and, you know, kept fighting even though there was no reason. And look at us now.
Yeah, but then the twist at the end is there's these like five old ladies that are gossiping.
Just a bunch of hens, man. It's awful.
And then so the news people are interviewing them about Cracker Jack because the apartment complex happened to burn down that he lived in. And they're like, oh, well, naturally we knew he was someone. We've got eyes, don't we? We had our suspicions all along. And then you just see red on the guy's face. He's like, no, you guys are lying. And he goes and sends off the beacon, start the invasion.
Yeah.
Yep.
But earlier, the same, you know, gaggle of hens were gossiping out, oh, he's an actor, huh? Well, you know what my husband says about all those sissy boys.
Right. Yeah. They kept like it. But the thing is, like, I really liked his character before as a normal guy, and you just hate him as a superhero.
Yeah.
Because as a normal guy, he's like, oh, let me get the door for you. Or, oh, you know, let me make sure you get upstairs okay. And he's like really, he's like this, just a sweet guy. But then when he puts on his Cracker Jack uniform, he turns into
a jackass. Kind
of a total jackass.
Seriously. He even cuts in the middle of two other superheroes who've been on this long stakeout.
Yeah, let me show you how the pros do it.
Right,
you
know? And then he goes down and beats up some guys and takes credit for the whole damn thing. Bastard. Mm.
And gives them like, oh, I could never done it myself.
Without these lovely ladies. Yeah. Jerk.
Yeah. I actually really like the story. And then, because I like the switch at the end, because you're thinking, okay, we're going to be okay. Or Astro City's going to be okay.
Right, and then the little old lady's like, then, me, 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 me. Yeah. And he's like, that's it. Humans must die.
Send the wave.
It's the gaggle of hens, man. That's the downfall of the universe.
So you hear that, little old ladies? Don't be the downfall.
All the little old ladies that listen to the comics podcast.
Yes. Little snickering ladies sitting in your little stitch and bitch sewing circles. You have the fate of our Earth, fate of Astro City in your little hands. Your little,
don't talk smack.
Yeah. Your little arthritis wrinkly hands. You be nice.
So the final story, we get reintroduced to the Samaritan again, and he's going on a date with another superhero named Winged Victory. So essentially it would be...
Which we meet earlier on in the... or I guess she kind of flies by, and there's a whole monologue about her from the young woman from Shadow Hill, yeah, who she like idolizes Winged Victory. Winged Victory?
Mm-hmm. Winged Victory.
Yeah.
So essentially it'd be what would happen if Superman and Wonder Woman went on a date. And as we were alluding to before, all of the...
If they went on a speed date.
Yeah. All of the other superheroes pulled together. So like, say, we have everything covered. You know, there's however many supergroups we are all covering any alien invasion, any natural disaster, anything. You guys have the night off.
You have the night off, right?
And this is for like, think about it. You have the entire superhero collection, everyone, just so these two people can go out to dinner for like an hour and a half, right? And the funny thing is, here we are, and Cracker Jack's like, what the hell is this? I got to work so this guy can go and get laid? This is BS, you know? He's like bitching about it, you know? Every superhero on the planet is out for like 2 hours just to cover the amount of work that these two people can do, you know?
And then the beauty of it is, it's not a good date. You know, they end up right, like, getting into a giant argument in the middle of it. And
right.
We do get to the Samaritan's origins revealed, which I thought was a pretty cool twist.
Mm-hmm.
And
I really liked that. I really, really liked it.
I think there's a thing, you and I are of a certain age where the event that he was sent back in time to stop was a big moment in our lives.
Yeah.
And it may not have been so much for John and Joe.
I remember where I was. Yeah, I remember. I was in seventh grade. Yeah, and my science teacher cried in the classroom.
Like, they literally stopped class and announced that in the middle of class.
And, yeah. And now you have to go read to figure out what we're talking about.
No, I remember it happening, but I was little.
Yeah, so. I mean, you guys are a decade younger than us. Yeah. And
yeah, that was, you know. So it's an interesting...
kind of a bummer in our world that the tragedy actually happened, but he was able to stop it in there.
Yeah. Samaritan didn't come back in our world.
That's right.
That's really very sad.
Or maybe we're the world where he came from, so who knows how bad our world will end up.
Well, I love how petty that it's so petty what they're fighting. Like, you have the most eligible bachelor and the most eligible bachelorette. And, you know, of course, you know, she like has this little pendant and it's got like a little sword, and she pulls the sword out, and then it, you know, she all of a sudden she's in her like golden outfit, and it's very Romanesque, and she's got these big wings, and he's like, she's beautiful. You're like, you know, he's like, she's so hot. And they're sitting at dinner, and, you know, she's like, well, because I'm a woman and I, you know, I want to like protect women's rights, I always save women first. And he's like, what? And his goal is always get to the guy you can save the fastest, so you can get to the next guy who you can save the fastest. And it doesn't matter if they're male or female. He's moving on efficiency. And she's like, well, no, I choose women over men. And he's like, you mean you don't save somebody because they're a man and you could get to them, you know, when you could have? And it's sort of,
you like know, you could potentially save everybody, but yeah, you choose to save the women first and let some people die just right, to be sure the women mm-hmm. get saved.
And you can see his, again, you know, he's sort of like, almost very, as like there's a little bit of Captain America in him, and to a certain degree, just a very little bit of
a Boy Scout.
Yeah, he's a big Boy Scout. Mm-hmm. So,
well, she makes a good point that, you know, I can't get to every single person, so I prioritize women.
Right. Well, yeah. So,
well, I'm sure she has her own justifications and it makes sense to her, but yeah, definitely different opinions there.
It does have a happy ending. Not that type of happy ending, but there's a happy ending. They meet up on like the tower in the middle of, like, basically what would be like, I think, sort of like their Statue of Liberty or their Big Ben. And, you know, there's all this stuff going on around them. And that's when they sort of rebond when they realize that, like, you know, I love the undercurrent of it being sort of about hope. Well, there's always hope, you know, mm-hmm. there's always hope that it could work or something. So I thought that was really cool.
To me, that's the reason why the world exists. For hope.
Yeah.
Oh, I thought it was it seemed to be bacon a, and other non-unmentionables.
It's kind of been a recurring theme in our podcast.
It has, yes.
Midnight Nation.
Yep.
God, that's such a good book. Well, that was actually, it's funny that you mentioned that, because that was my only gripe, and it was actually, I was going to bring this up specifically about Midnight Nation. That was my only gripe about some of these stories, which to a certain degree, they were just a tad, little tiny, itty bitty tiny bit of nitpicking, little tiny, Justin, really, are you seriously going to say this, nitpicking? They were just a little bit sort of predictable. Just a little tiny bit superhero predictable. Mm. Not all of them, but some of them.
Yeah, but still told a good story.
Yeah, and I that doesn't take away from it. And it was thinking, and the reason why I was thinking that was I was thinking to myself, okay, I know at some point we're going to say, what are our recommendations on this? Like, should you go read it? Obviously, I think you really should, because there's so much good here that's great. There's so much good that's great. When you stack it up against like Midnight Nation, where, you know, so let's say when John hands me Midnight Nation and I start reading the first few pages and I'm thinking, oh, it's going to be like a kind of a crime noir, you know, this is going to be an interesting crime story. And then about, you know, 8 pages in or something like that, it totally crazy Ivan's on you. And all of a sudden it's all this other stuff. And I'm like, whoa, I wasn't expecting that. And then you're just, you know, it just grabbed me by the throat and wouldn't let go.
Yeah, it's a powerful book.
And so that was kind of where I was sort of coming from, where that's why, you know, that would be the only thing that I didn't just absolutely love, was that some of this stuff was, okay, well, I think I know where they're going to go with this. Mm-hmm. And that's not a bad thing. I'm just saying, if you're going to nitpick one little thing about this, that would be it.
I found this first volume to be very, very well made and very interesting, but not real entertaining. Like, not like fun, you know? Yeah. I mean, and I'm not trying to suggest that things need to be fun all the time. Mm-hmm. But I think that there's definitely different sides to creative work. And sometimes they are powerful and skillful and, you know, cause introspection and, you know, thoughtfulness. And sometimes they're just fun and there's all the range between there. And I think it's almost like you could rate things or quantify things in two very different categories of how skillfully was it made and does it make you think and all that. And then how much fun was it?
See, I really enjoyed these, but I think a lot of it was what else was coming around this time in 95. And this was like the height of the Rob Liefeld Image books, where poorly drawn and, you know, fight scenes for no reasons and badly plotted. And then you had this where they were good, solid stories. It all made sense, and it was a good...
It's like a breath of fresh air.
Yeah, it really was. Yeah. You know, it wasn't trying to be cool, spelled K-E-W-L.
Mm-hmm.
Yo.
And then all the covers by Alex Ross.
Oh. Yeah,
and there are some beautiful covers.
All the character designs were by him as well.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, he just didn't have the schedule to put out a monthly book at the time, and then Brad Anderson is the artist on it, had been an industry veteran forever. Oh, worked on the X-Men's in the early 80s, and...
It's a gorgeous art. It looks really good.
So I'll ask you this, because as you were saying how you were sort of feeling about it, I had this little mini epiphany, and that is, which Kill Bill was better? Kill Bill 1 or Kill Bill 2 for you?
I haven't seen 2 in a long time.
Okay.
That's probably our answer then.
Yeah, probably 1.
I'll give you, this is why I asked that question, because Kill Bill 1 really sets the stage for Kill Bill 2.
Sure.
Gives you a lot of the story and a lot of substance and a lot of blood and gore. But Kill Bill 2 is sort of like the cleanup. It's the satisfaction. It's the part of the story that it fills in some of the holes that you don't get in the second one, the first one, right? I probably could say that I felt the same way a little bit about this group of stories. Mm-hmm. Until we start talking about the next trade,
right,
where you really get, like, that's where I feel like, you know, it hit its stride. But maybe it's because it was solid story.
And it did. And we'll find as we go through more of them that there's some really, really amazing stuff that's done later on.
And this is not mediocre.
This is just like, and this is, you know, it's essentially the world building of it.
Right. And I'm not suggesting that it wasn't really enjoyable.
Right, no.
I don't know if I used enjoyable. I think I said entertaining.
Right? You said fun, right.
Fun, yeah. That right. It's You know, it just could have been a little maybe like just Kurt Busiek overload because
yeah, because we did you know,
because we did Marvels and Marvels is a good long book
and then Confession and I mean it's a lot
and it's all a lot of kind of heavy introspective like what is it all about, what's going on for for sort of real human drama kind of stuff
and like you can only watch so many Stanley Kubrick movies in a day. Before you
need... and while they're all good,
while they're all three in a row, well, actually, we're just you're ready about... to just sleep for a week.
Well, we were just talking about this the other day. I was talking with a friend who'd never really watched any, or watched maybe the first season or so of Breaking Bad.
Mm-hmm.
And I've a big Breaking Bad fan and watched all of it, but I have realized that it's so heavy that I can't just watch it marathon it. And I didn't get into it until it was many seasons deep. And I'm thinking, yay, I just watch them all and marathon like crazy. And like I get through a season and it gets all the way into the next season and it's still just dark and heavy and just, and it's just kind of like, I need a break. You
just need to curl up in a ball on the floor and cry.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
And I am actually in that same spot because I'm watching it back to back to back on Netflix and I have to take breaks.
You gotta take breaks. Yes. Yeah. I mean, there's some media that is so, that's still really good, but it's just heavy. And I think that this is heavy, even though this one isn't anywhere near as heavy as Marvel's was.
Yeah.
But it still has a lot to say, I think.
It's heavy in a good way.
Hey, like, oh, yeah.
Like, you got extra slices of bacon on your burger, and you didn't expect it. It's heavy in a good way.
It wasn't.
But you need a nap after that, too.
It wasn't 14 pieces, but it was like 4. And normally, they only put those... two little tiny paper thin. Who is so good at cutting bacon that you can cut it almost transparent?
Yeah,
who the hell? And actually, I'll take that back. Who is so bad at cutting bacon that you can cut it transparent thin? This is not sushi knife skill bacon cutting class. I want a thick piece of bacon that when I take a bite out of it, I'm like, that was a pig.
That's probably not real bacon.
What is it?
Bacon does make pretty much everything better.
I don't know, but you know, we had brownies at my party on Saturday. Regular brownies.
Those were hella good.
They were so good. And I'm thinking, and the other day I was like, how could you make that better? And bacon. I thought, bacon bits. But like, if you cooked it yourself and then crumbled it in.
Yeah.
But I don't know, because...
No, I've had expert done chocolate chip and bacon cookies.
Yeah. I've had the chocolate maple... bacon brownies.
Now we're getting hungry.
I've gone to the gym. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to do good. And you're talking about
bacon.
Amazing.
Bacon. It's bacon.
So nutshelling it, it's a heavy book.
Yeah, I love it. I loved it. You know, I have all the hardcovers. I read them all when they came out. I bought the hardcovers when they were like $40, $50 at the time. Like I said, I always recommend this for something for people who are looking for a comic where, you know, something off the beaten path, but something they can get into easily.
It's a good, I don't even know that I feel like it was overly heavy. I just feel like, you know, it's a different perspective. And some comics are really heavy. I mean, think about when we read Old Man Logan. That's a heavy, heavy story.
Sure.
So.
I guess, but that one did a really good job of kind of hitting its action beats and.
Right.
You know, keeping a good pace.
But it didn't.
I mean, it was essentially a book of short stories.
Right, right.
And those are always a different read than a novel.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I'm not complaining. I'm just saying that going into it, you shouldn't expect it to be your run-of-the-mill experience. Yeah. It's not going to be. It's going to be great, but it's just not going to be what you're expecting if you're not.
It's not Spider-Man.
No.
It is not Spider-Man.
Well, I mean, Cracker Jack is a little, or Jack in the Box is a little like Spider-Man, but yeah.
He jumps around and shoots streamers in people's faces?
He can totally like stream you to the wall in all different colors.
It's just multicolored web shooters. It's all that is.
All right, we'll take a quick intermission and we're going to get out the trades for Confession and we'll be right back.
All right.
All right. Hope you everyone enjoyed their little intermission, Batman sound, or whatever it will be.
I'm Batman.
Next, we're going to be talking about the third volume of Astro City called Confession. It was a 6-part story arc that was the first novel length version and a little different than the short stories as it told a whole story. So we deal with the main protagonist of this, the one who's were inside his head throughout the whole book. Our main protagonist is a young man who's orphaned, who's tired of living in the small town that he's living in, where he's known as the Kenny Boy. And we see him on a bus arriving in Astro City for the first time. And it's kind of cool to see, you know, going from small Midwestern town into a giant metropolis. The bridge they pass over kind of looks like the Golden Gate Bridge. And we're introduced to Astro City, and he's looking out the window and sees, I think it was it Winged Victory fly by?
And she buzzes all the buses.
Yeah.
And she's got a really short skirt, too.
Darn her.
And very powerful thighs.
Justin just wants some super loving.
I do. He meets these sort of evangelists, which are very much they're a little bit more interesting version of like the Hare Krishnas or something like that, as he kind of gets off the bus and they're going on about, you know, judgment day is coming. Will you be ready? And, you know, they're called the crossbreed. The crossbreed. And it, you know, sort of very skillfully, initially, I think your reaction is supposed to be sort of annoyed by them. But I think perhaps maybe if you're, maybe that's my reaction at first, sort of annoyed by them. I think the other thing that they do really well in this set of six books is they very much early on, you get a sense that he's just so really unhappy with his, you know, sort of his, where he came from. He goes on and on about how his father was stupid for, you know, his father's a doctor, and his father basically takes care of you know, he's a pediatrician, I believe, like a family doctor.
General practice
kind of doctor. Yeah. And, you know, he would take care of people, and even if they didn't pay, he would still take care of them, right? So his heart was definitely in the right place, but obviously they lived very meagerly because of that. And the son always saw him, you know, our protagonist always sees his father as very, this sort of this stupid, sort of weak person, which is an interesting sort of underlying theme of this whole story, which you kind of get later on. But again, it's one of those things where it pops up later on and you're like, oh, nice way to bring it back. You know, like they do it so well. What is that called, John? What do they call that?
Foreshadowing.
I don't think it's foreshadowing. I know what foreshadowing is. Foreshadowing is book four of the first set of books, which comes back to haunt us here. That's foreshadowing. I think this is more
like a consistent, like a through line sort of thing.
Yeah. Right? Like, you know, it's almost like a sub theme, or there's a theme, or not a theme, but a subplot. Maybe that's a subplot. For any writers out there who are going, you're right now banging on the desk at work and pulling your headphones out because you're angry at the idiot that's calling it something that it's not. You just send John an angry email and he'll tell me. No, dude, it's this.
That's John Harder.
Yeah. Harder, yes. Waterford Comics. Or you can send me, you can tweet me on askametalhead@twitter.com or whatever. And set me correct.
The BQE is Brooklyn Queens Express.
That's right.
I love how somebody actually set that in. It's good stuff.
So anyway, we're introduced to the crossbreed, and it's basically the young man, you know, learning his way around the city. So one of the first things he does when Astro City is he finds this bar that's run by an old superhero and applies to be a busboy. And after busing the tables for a week or so, the owner tells him, well, we didn't see you with asking for autographs or trying to take pictures for a news story. I think I know what you're after. And he gives him a card for a place called Butler's, where it's kind of like a social club for the superheroes. And he applies there and is accepted, you know, doing busboy work. And about a week into the job, they happen to be attacked by supervillains.
Glue gun.
Yeah. The loser supervillain of the story.
He's got like a big caulking gun. That's his secret.
That's his evil weapon.
I know.
Mm-hmm. There used to be, where this was kind of taken, there used to be a Marvel villain that fought the Fantastic Four and the Human Torch. And no shit, his name was Paste Pot Pete. And his thing was, he attacked people with a glue gun.
That's amazing.
They Paste later changed pot. His name to the Trapster to make it sound a little
more cool. That's Paste where pot. The Trapster came
Paste
from.
Paste Pot Pete?
Yeah, and Paste Pot Pete. He basically still just throws glue at people.
He's like, you're stuck to stuff now. Yeah. I'm going to go eat some.
Then I'm going to come back and kick you. Yeah,
don't let Pete.
Don't wait till you cure. Then I'm going to beat you up.
That's right.
You'd be glued good.
He ate too much paste in third grade. Who made paste taste like mint? Why would you do that?
I don't know what it tastes like.
This is before your time, I'm sure. But John, I'm sure Harder and I can relate. When I remember being like third grade and the paste, you'd open it up and it had this amazing minty flavor. And there's one of those big tongue depressors. You could just take a big old, like, oh, it's so good. And of course, it has to be, you know, non-toxic. But
I'm sure. You know, in art class, there were paste eaters right before lunch. So you're kind of hungry anyway.
Well, I never ate any. I think I probably maybe had a little dabble in it. My thing to do when I was a kid was take Elmer's glue and coat your hand with it,
right? And then you can peel it off.
Oh my god, there is nothing like that. Well, there's, but yeah, that's pretty awesome.
Yeah, that was good times.
It's that was true. That was before the interwebs. Damn you, young whippersnappers. We didn't have tablets and cell phones that did 95 different things.
We glued our hands to things.
Yeah. You wanted to make a phone call? You had to stand within 12 feet of the wall. You think about how good you have it now. How good we have it.
Does anyone have a regular, like, rotary phone anymore?
Nope.
Oh,
we only have cell phones. We have no landline.
We have no landline in our house either.
We still have a landline. We're ghetto.
Now, my parents' house, we used to have a little, like, crap old rotary phone outside, like, on the side of the house in a little box, and it actually had the dial.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
You had to be...
My favorite thing was to just keep my finger in the 9 and dial everything in increments like that.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
My grandma had this dial on her antenna where she'd be like, and she had all of these, she had like a piece of paper that went around it, you know, like a little, like a little round piece, and all of these handwritten lines where it was marked. And man, if that thing came untaped, you were screwed. And you know, you'd actually be like, go turn it to 732. And it'd be like, you'd have to turn this thing and it was hard to turn. And then it would like, zzz, like it would move back a little bit and then. The TV would come in. My grandma was the raddest, dude. She got me in an Atari 2600 that I got just for her house, and it probably got 4 hours of play in 2 years, but I had it there.
Why didn't you just stream it, Justin?
Well, this was, I was 7, 8, 9, something like that.
I know. Why didn't you just stream it or do it on your cell phone?
Yeah, well, I didn't have that stuff back then.
I know.
I didn't have a superhero mask and a glue gun.
Taylor never believes me that I told her nobody had a cell phone when I was your age. Nobody.
She doesn't believe you?
No, she doesn't.
Really?
Yeah,
legitimately does not.
Yeah, legitimately, like completely blows her mind that
wow. Like there was no such thing.
Yeah,
I don't. Okay, in my childhood, this is what's been invented: the Walkman, the microwave. We didn't have microwave ovens, and you know what? They were $800. I remember my mom. Got a certificate or something like that from some store. Like that was a big wedding gift, or I don't remember what it was, but it was this big, amazing thing that they got a microwave.
And it was almost as big as your oven.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, don't stand near it unless you don't want to have kids later on, you know. You know, made this noise, vibrated on the counter. And then you learn that you put tinfoil in there. And what the hell are you doing to my microwave? Nothing.
It's some crazy technological advances. I mean, the fact that most of us read a substantial amount of our comics on tablet or phone. I haven't read an actual like paper book in forever, aside from my comics.
Yeah.
You know, I still like the feel of comics, but I haven't read a novel in forever on anything but my phone.
Not since the last time I dropped a hardback book on my face because I read like this when I...
Right. That's it. Dropping your tablet's not awesome, though. That hurts really bad.
I need to get a... Well, I have an unusual. I don't have an iPad, so it's hard to find cases for this. But anyway, so do you have a case for that? No, I'll have to see what you have.
We should probably continue talking about the comics.
Yeah, sorry.
Oh, are we talking about comics?
We've completely derailed that. So.
One thing that has been around since we were little turds is comics. Speaking of which,
yep.
Hey, you know what? I have an interesting story to tell you. It's about a comic that we read last week.
Oh,
it's called
Astro City.
Astro City. Mm. Anyway, so what we were talking about was the big buck-toothed, goofy-looking super villain named
I think his name's Glue Gun.
Glue Gun, whose weapon of choice is a giant cock gun. And
I've got a story
C-A-U-L-K.
For you guys.
I bet you do. C-A-U-L-K gun. Yeah. Cock.
Cock.
That kind of cock.
The stuff that you put around your bathtub, which is apparently evil now that I realize it.
What's your story, JP? Okay.
So I have a good friend of mine started working at Orchard Supply, and he worked in the section that would have the cock guns, right? And so this little tiny Asian lady comes in.
Oh, I know where this is going.
And she's like, she looks at him, she goes, "Do you have the cock?" I mean, I'm not kidding. This is verbatim what he told me. And he's like, and he looks at her and he's like, he just starts grinning and he's like, because he'd only been working there for a little while. So he's not thinking cock and gun.
Right.
He's, you know, being a perverted teenager. Totally. And she's, he's like, "What?" And so then she goes to make the hand symbol of it, right? But if you think about a cock gun, right, you get the handle with your right hand and then your hands up front. It looks like she's cupping some balls and holding her. I mean, it look, and she's like, "You know, like, cock."
Oh my God.
And he's like, "Oh." She goes, "You know, the black cock. I need the black cock."
Oh, no.
And he goes, cocking.
Gotcha.
Yes, right over here.
Right over here.
I need the black. I am now complete.
I need the cock.
I was looking for the cock of balls. I couldn't find it.
I used to work in a hardware store when I was in high school. And our big thing was if there was a hot woman that came in, you would hear, Joe, aisle six for customer support. There was nobody named Joe that worked in the store. That was secret code for hot chick. Totally. And then like six guys would walk down the aisle. "Hey, do you need anything?" "Oh, no, I'm fine. I've already been asked." You didn't want to be the sixth guy because by that time you pissed them off. So
that's good life advice. You never want to be the sixth guy.
Oh.
37. All right, anyway.
All right.
So he's at this.
Getting back to the glue gun.
Yes. We should probably get beyond the glue gun. So anyway, our protagonist is bussing tables at this like gala event, and it's all the superheroes in their normal, like they're all in suits. They're not in any of their sort of.
Except for Cracker Jack,
which nobody told me it was going to be like everybody just dressed up. You know, Cracker Jack shows up. God, he's such a goober. He's such a pedo. He looks like a pedo. He's got this goofy mustache.
He's got that "I smell cookies" smile.
Yeah. And so the bad guy jumps
through. That's a pedo smile. Think about it.
I smell cookies.
Think about the face somebody makes if they smell cookies.
Okay. Whoa.
It's true, though.
Jamie and Taylor are baking cookies right now, so when I walk home.
As long as they're not baking brownies.
Oh, that's amazing.
Okay, anyway. Jeez, I'm trying to tell a story here, people. So Glue Gun jumps through the glass roof and lands right behind this guy and, you know, grabs our protagonist, whose name, I can't remember what his name is.
It
Daniel?
Isn't said in the first two issues.
That's right. Yeah, they never say his name. He's just the guy.
Yeah, I was going through trying to find it, and it's not said until about three issues in.
It's another one of those things where you just kind of like read along and just accept that at some point you don't even really care.
Well, I mean, if you think about it, you know, it's his internal monologue. And how many times would you say Justin Woods, you know, Justin Woods went to the store.
You never talk in third person. Yeah. Isn't there a Seinfeld about that?
I do.
But. Do you? Okay. Well then, do you have your own theme song?
Occasionally, John talks in the third person.
Read enough comic books and your inner monologue is in the third person.
My inner monologue can never, ever get out. For any NSA that's listening. Hopefully you don't. Anyway, so there's all these other busboys, and he just happens to luckily be the guy that the bad guy that Glue Gun grabs and puts his glue gun to his head and is like, "I'm going to kill him." And he sort of, you know, he realizes he's got this moment to like break free. And he does, and he beats the crap out of this guy in front of all these superheroes and all of these other busboys. And they just start laughing, and they're looking at him. You know, it was almost as if it was sort of accidentally a test. Like, they tested his mettle, right? They were waiting for somebody to step up, and he did. And you kind of realize that he's a superhero fledgling. He's a
He's got potential.
He's got potential, right?
And I liked how the scene after, how the other busboys were pissed off it didn't happen to them. And he's like,
so you've been here 3 days.
He was like, what was I supposed to do? He attacked me. It wasn't like I asked him to.
Right.
Said, I'm sorry, could you grab one of the senior busboys?
Yeah. Can you grab one of the busboys that actually wants to be a hero? Because I don't think he realized at that point that he wanted to be, right?
Mm.
He didn't have any aspirations. You don't get the sense that he was aspiring to it.
No, not really.
So they meet him out in the alley, and they're going to beat him up. And then that's when we meet the confessor.
Now, as soon as I saw the confessor show up and say, all right, you and me need to talk, immediately I thought, oh, great. It's going to be the sidekick Altar Boy. And I open up the next issue and Altar Boy. I'm like, oh, oh no.
Altar Boys. Well, you know, does he wear knee pads? I don't know. Well, he wears a mask.
They do a lot of praying.
They do. Yeah,
he's got that big smock on.
What is that? The thing that he wears?
Vestments?
Big bib.
I'm not sure.
Yeah.
I don't think any of us are Catholic. So.
I did grow up Catholic. I'm what you call a recovering Catholic.
Good for you.
That's why I looked at you. I thought that you might. Of all of us in here, you may have been the one that would have known.
All right. So in episode two. In number five, technically this is number five. So when John sent the books to me, I noticed that it was four through nine?
Yeah.
Through nine. And I was like, where's 1, 2, 3? And he said, well, that's a different story arc. And this one is really one I wanted us to read about. So this starts in, it's number five, I guess, the confession. Yeah. So in the very next book, you really get the sense that time has moved along a little bit because he's... Our protagonist is actually right out fighting. Bat. Yeah, he's out fighting crime with the confessor, and he's fighting a lot of crime
and doing well.
Yeah, he's doing well.
Holding his own for a kid.
He's learning. You know, you see where he makes mistakes, and the confessor is there to sort of help him through things. And I always thought the confessor had a really cool costume, by the way. But
well, it's a great costume.
Yeah,
I love how the crucifix, the silver crucifix with the solid black.
Glows, which has far more significance than just being a cross because he's called the confessor. Later on, we'll find out that it's got really important significance of a non-religious type. So this kid's starting to feel good about himself. He's going out into the world. He's developed, you know, he's finding what his purpose is, his special purpose. They sort of have this area in the back of this giant cathedral that's been walled off, and that's what they use as their headquarters. And all along the time that this is happening, while he's training early on, so you'll remember we were discussing Shadow Hill in the before the break. Shadow Hill has its own sort of, you know, mystique to it, that there's these murders going on in Shadow Hill. Like there's a serial killer killing people. And it sort of starts to shift from the superheroes kind of being, you know, lauded and applauded to, you know, why aren't they saving these people? Like, why aren't they doing anything about it? And so there's a bit of mystery that's built into the whole story about what's going on. You know, he'll be at lunch with his friends or people that he's at lunch with, and they're sort of, you know, they're griping about why the superheroes aren't doing their job or kind of giving them crap. And, you know, he's one of them now. And so he gets to see sort of both perspectives and both sides. And, you know, he gets mad about it and at one point tells a guy off. But there's also some interesting mystique and stuff going on with the confessor that we'll find out about later.
Meanwhile, we get reintroduced to our old friend Cracker Jack. Who has been framed for robbing places. So Cracker Jack happens to be going, our protagonist, who's now in his alter ego.
His
alter ego. He sees Cracker Jack going by, so he follows him. He says, the confessor is teaching him, look where the patterns don't make sense.
Right, right.
And he realizes, you know, this isn't how Cracker Jack normally swings through the city. It's different. So he follows him into a convenience store, and Cracker Jack starts to rob the store, and he realizes it isn't little Cracker Jack. And it's revealed it's the giant alien bug shapeshifters that we saw earlier in first volume of Astro City.
Right.
And so then the real Cracker Jack happens to come across this and said, oh, yeah, I was looking to clear my name, and takes credit for it.
Which is exactly how he rolls.
Yeah, when I was reading it, I was like, we're going to realize that it's not Cracker Jack. It's his alien alter ego, Fiddle Faddle. But it doesn't actually ever get to that.
And then, of course, Cracker Jack taking, you know, the full credit for all that allows the shapeshifter to
escape. Because he's a dick.
Why do they always draw the guys that are supposed to be jerks with hairy chests?
Prejudice, man.
I'm telling you what. Just because you didn't, I wanted to explain the fiddle faddle joke.
We understood it.
Did you get it? Yeah, John didn't get it.
Fiddle faddle is a knockoff. Generic.
Oh, okay.
It's inferior in every sense of the word.
Good to know.
But Cracker Jack's pretty good.
From fiddle faddles.
Yes. Well, don't stay away from it. Like, if you have a craving or a hungering and there's no Cracker Jack, it's an okay alternative.
It doesn't have prizes in it.
Oh, well, then that's bullshit. It. That's all there is to it. You need the prizes.
That's right. No tattoos for you, fiddle faddle.
Oh, I can just imagine the bad pickup lines Cracker Jack uses now. Wait till you find my prize, babe.
Just lick it and stick it. It's a tattoo. Back to the book. Oh my God, we're horrible.
Yeah,
has been a meander.
Yeah, we're meandering hard on this second volume.
Well, the second volume is one definite story arc, and it's actually really good.
It's basically the hero's journey. You know, we see the young man, you know, go from being a young Luke Skywalker to the apprentice to
a Jedi master.
Yeah, yeah. What I really liked rereading this, you know, probably for the first time in 8 or 9 years, was there's this whole subplot about this revealed later that the alien shapeshifters have taken over the political leaders,
the mayor,
and all that, and are trying to force the superheroes to register. And I hadn't thought about that till I reread it, and I'm like, wait, that's the whole Marvel Civil War
and Skrull Invasion.
Yeah, and Skrull Invasion, you know, right there. And I'm like, wow, I'm sure it was completely coincidental.
Yeah,
but I mean, it's just like I was like, wow, that was exactly
Civil War. Did it in what, three books?
97, yeah,
and three books,
rather than like 2 year storylines that the Marvel did with the Skrull Invasion and the.
So I was going to ask you, because of the timeliness of this, when was this?
97.
Okay, so 97. All right. So in volume 6, it starts off with, in the previous couple of books, there's sort of, in the backs of the story, there's the serial killer that kind of is showing up in Shadow Hill. And nobody seems to be doing anything about it, even though the superheroes are like all over it. They just can't seem to find what this is. And the aliens start pinning this on the superheroes. And, you know, again, we find out that the aliens have taken over the mayor and some other guys. And are basically trying to sort of debunk or, you know,
discredit
the superheroes. And then in this episode or this book, you find out that a pretty little blonde white girl gets killed. And that's when the community starts to turn. You know, they're fed up. And I was going to ask, I wonder if this parallels something or anything that was going on around that same time.
No, not that I remember. I mean, not that I know of. Mm-hmm. But I mean, it's kind of like anything. If it's, say, homeless people that are getting killed,
nobody cares.
Nobody really cares.
Reporter, right?
But when it was, you know, like the poly class thing in Northern California where we live, mm-hmm. When that happened, you know, it was everyone lost their shit because it was a 12-year-old white girl, you know, that was abducted and
picked up right out of her front yard.
Which happened like 30 miles from where we live and just kind of hit home. So, I mean, this is kind of that thing where, you know, generally with kids or whatever, it's more something to draw you in, you mm-hmm. know, rather than, you know, if it was just junkies dying or because, I mean, I think that's how it started. It was.
Yeah, they hit something that you consider tender and that society on the whole feels compelled to protect.
Right, right. And I found where it says it. It says hundreds of people took to the streets, angry, scared, desperate. They wanted something done. And whatever it was, they wanted it done now. Maybe it was the heat, because he keeps talking about how it's getting hotter and hotter. Mm-hmm. Maybe it was the frustration. Maybe it was the fact, as one Bakersville minister pointed out, that Sarah Lynn was the first white person to die. And I think that goes back to the sort of who lives on Shadow Hill versus who lives in Astro City. There's some class difference there as well.
Yeah.
Not that color defines class, but there are some parallels there. So, and we see the superheroes kind of banding together, and they're keeping watch on the border between Shadow Hill and Astro City. And the Hanged Man is actually patrolling, and you see he becomes far more of a part of the story, develops some significance here. And,
seems pretty cool.
Yeah. And then at one point, the mayor brings in this, like, super cyborg hunter dude named Mordecai Chalk. The heroes aren't doing their job, and so he hires, like, an uber hero to go into Silent Hill. Shadow Hill.
He hires this uber... There's a coal fire burning under Silent Hill.
Oh, okay. Yes. Totally different story. And this guy ends up disappearing he's gone, you know?
I liked how his character design looked like every bad superhero from the 1990s. You know, the cyborgs with the big guns and...
He's got a butt chin, too. Yeah.
Just perfect.
Pulled him right out of Rob Liefeld. Yeah.
Oh, oh, Rob, you just don't get any love.
Not in this store.
No.
Not in this store. So, yeah, I mean, it was a fun book, a hero's journey kind of thing. There's a lot of spoilery stuff that we could probably get into a lot more that... If you are planning on reading it, we probably don't want to give it away.
That's true.
Yeah. What I really liked at the end of it, there was the six-part storyline, and then they also included the Wizard one-half issue. For those of you that are kind of new to this, Wizard used to be a magazine that was published about comics every month. It had a price guide in it. It was generally kind of fanboy-ish.
I always used to look up how much my 1993 Marvel Masterpiece comic book card set was worth.
Oh, yeah.
All right.
But besides doing that, they'd also put out comics. They would commission comics to be done, and you'd send like $4.95 and whatever for shipping, and you'd get a cool, you know, comic that you couldn't get anywhere else. And you could get a cool comic that you couldn't get anywhere else. So this one actually had one of my favorite stories, and it is Sean O'Rourke's, who was with us on the Midnight Nation podcast. It is his absolute favorite comic story.
Really?
Yeah. And basically, it's about this guy who keeps remembering someone that never existed.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, yeah. God, that's a good one.
And so it's this guy that keeps remembering and having dreams about someone that he was deeply in love with, but no one remembers her. He calls up like his best friend. Do you ever remember me liking a brunette, you know, and all this? And like, no, you've always been into blondes. And it's like something's missing in his life. So he walks around all morose, like something's missing, and he just can't remember what's going on. And everyone's like, you know, snap out of it, you know? So finally he's remembering, and then the Hanged Man, who we've seen a few times, appears before him. And basically the Hanged Man reveals to him, I can tell you what happened, but do you want to know? It'll totally change, you know, your life. And so he says yes, and he shows him. And basically what had happened was there was a big time event, you know, like you get in comics where the time stream's messed up. Mm-hmm. And the superheroes save the day for the most part, but there's a couple things. So what happened in this time event was someone died there they shouldn't have. And so this girl was never born. So basically, it was this life he remembered with the love of his life and his wife, and now she never existed.
Uh-huh.
But it's still in his mind, all these events that happened because he loved her so much. So the Hangman asked him, he said, well, now I've revealed this to you. Do you still want to remember or do you not? And he chose to remember, he says, because I loved her that much. And now at least I know that she was real.
That's very cool.
And then so then when he goes to sleep now, he still dreams of her. But instead of nightmares, it's remembering his true love. And then, I mean, and this was done in like 12 pages. And I remember the first time, you know, Sean and I were working at Comics and Comics when he read it. He literally had to walk out of the store for like half an hour and then come back, you know, to
compose himself.
Yeah. Hmm.
So.
I know. No, I wasn't crying.
Yeah.
I had some really spicy peppers.
Yeah. I got to go to the bathroom, you know, and kind of thing, you know.
Somebody was chopping onions in the store.
But, I mean, for me, the confession story is a great story. I recommend the trade just for that story alone.
Mm-hmm. Hmm.
Thank you for sitting in with us as we've kind of rambled on tonight. It's one of those end of summer things where it's hot and we're all kind of...
It's meandering.
Yeah, meandering. Mentally. thank you for listening. We really appreciate all that. And
you endurance athletes, yeah, you.
At least on the podcast, you can pause it and come back.
Right.
You
know?
But don't do that, because I might say something funny in a minute.
So next week, we're actually going to be reviewing Rick Remender and John Romita Jr.'s Captain America 10-issue run that started about a year ago with Marvel Now. Just completed last week. We're going to check that out. Be a nice 10-issue run. A little bit different for Captain America than you generally think of. Very action-packed, very sci-fi based. It's a lot of fun. We may have a fifth J for that, as John Foltz has talked about wanting to come and sit in on that.
Yeah, that'd be fun.
So we will see everyone next week, or hopefully everyone tunes in next week to listen to us. And we'll talk to you guys then.
All right, see you guys then.
Take care.
Bye night.
That's a big freaking train, man.
It's a motorcycle outside.
Oh, is it? Oh, dude.
The cow goes moo.
It all sounds funny.
The train goes choo choo. The motorcycle goes vroom, vroom, vroom. Man, that's a big dog.
Dang. Okay, that's enough. Drive away.
He's got to impress all the drunk chicks.